Welcome to the Gentlemen Ultra podcast, where we continue our special series of three World Cup questions, where we ask the same three questions to some of our friends in the world of calcio. Our special guest today is a fellow contributor to the Gentlemen Ultra, has a fantastic series on Roma, 2001 to 2021, as well as a member of the Gentlemen Ultra parish, as we said, and a good lover of calcio kits, Martin Dunlop. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here. Big fan of the podcast. This is my debut on it. And it's really good. I've really enjoyed the World Cup series as well. It's been great hearing people's memories and thoughts on their favourite moments. So hopefully we'll add some to that today as well.
My pleasure. Yeah. And of course, you've got like a three-part series on Roma in the, 21st century, I was going to say, 2001 to 2021. You've got the first two parts are available now on gentlemanultra.com. And I believe you've got part three coming out soon. Is that correct? No spoilers?
Yeah, I think there's three already. There's a fourth coming, but it may turn into a fifth actually, because there's going to be an extension as of last season. Because they actually won a trophy for the first time in a long time. So, there's going to be an extension coming to that soon. So, there may be two more parts to it.
Oh, excellent. I look forward to it.
Keep your eyes peeled on the website for that.
Look forward to it.
But that's something. There's no shortage of opportunities to write about when it comes to Roma.
The gift.
Some of them are good as well.
Yeah, the gift that never stops giving. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I know you could probably say that about a lot of calcio as well.
That's true.
And some other big teams.
All right. Our first question, back to the World Cup. Yeah. So, what's your favourite moment from your World Cup past?
So, favourite World Cup moment, you might be able to tell from my accent that I'm from Scotland. And Scotland, well, we don't have too many. I've not had too many World Cup memories from my time, certainly. From Scotland, we've been in three World Cups in my lifetime. 1986, I don't remember because there was one. 1990, vague recollections of watching some of the game, but not anything I could particularly comment on. 1998, however, we played Brazil in the opening game of the tournament, which for me, my favourite moment is not necessarily the game itself, but it was the expectation around us. And I know one of your previous contributors, Andy, spoke about this game as well. Incredible, just the thought that we'd been drawn to play Brazil in the opener to this tournament. I'm sure everyone will probably remember the Brazil team 1998 was almost a wee bit like, felt a wee bit like the Harlem Globetrotters of the football world at this point.
And is that Ronaldo, all because of the night commercial?
Well, the night commercial, yeah, of course. And also, I heard you discussing with Andy the Scotland's version of that commercial as well, where they kicked a ball around Prestwick Airport. But the Brazil commercial. Ronaldo, at this time, I mean, the hype and hysteria around Ronaldo, all justified at that time, of course. To me, that was probably my first experience of there being a real World Cup football superstar. Pele and Maradona, obviously, but when Maradona was at his peak, I was very young, so I remember him in 1994 World Cup, some memories, but Ronaldo at this point was just incredible. And yeah, for our country to be drawn to play against them in the opening game, I mean, it was at that age, I think it was 13, it was all I thought about for weeks, if not months, before it. I grew up in Largs, which is a small seaside town in Scotland, but it's actually got quite a strong Italian community, and they've got a famous ice cream shop there in Ardini's, it's called, and they did a special at Scotland World Cup. I say flavour, but essentially it was a blue and white saltire ice cream, but things like that, just adding up to the excitement. And I think it was 10th of June, the opening game. It's just a date that I probably still remember, 10th of June, as being Scotland v Brazil Day. School bus, I think the game kicked off at 4:30. I remember racing off the school bus to get home. And as we were discussing, just kind of off air before starting this as well, like, so much of football is just about kind of like personal memories. And remember that World Cup in particular, my brothers and I, one of three, two brothers, and with a couple of friends from just round the corner. And this is probably the last World Cup where we can watch these games maybe in the house. Like, it was maybe more towards pubs at some of the later tournaments. But this is, these are games we watch together. And even just wee things, like, remember, I don't know if in Australia you're familiar with Chomp bars. It's like a wee kind of like 10p, 15p chocolate bar you get. That was our official World Cup snack.
Oh, wow.
So like things like that that just stick in your head, like, oh, who's bringing the Chomp bars around for the game? And yeah, like, just so many memories. Mm. The game itself wasn't a classic. However, that probably suited Scotland because it was quite a slow game. Brazil did open the scoring very early, and Scotland managed to draw level just before half time with a penalty. And we actually looked like we could end up forcing a draw, but in classic Scottish circumstances, we lost our late own goal, and with our very own Braveheart lookalike Colin Hendry defender, looked like he was almost going to be able to reach this OG in the line, which came off another defender, Tom Boyd's shoulder, but kind of trickled into the net, and you knew there was no way back for Scotland at that point. But no, my moment was the expectation, just the
build up to it.
And yeah, I mean, yeah.
I love that about a World Cup, that you get, you know, like, you get the fixture, the schedule, the fixture list, you know, a few months beforehand, and the amount of times you look at the games and you look at the group stages in particular, and you circle the games of interest, and you're highlighting, like, you know, you're highlighting games, you know, like, it's, you're picking and choosing the games you want to watch. You can't miss that. That's a must watch. If I miss that one, that's fine. But these ones, I have to see these live. You know, like, that's all part of the fun, isn't it? And the excitement to the build up.
Like, for Scotland and Brazil to be the opening for me was incredible. But the rest of the tournament didn't go so well. We drew with Norway and then lost 3-0 to Morocco, and out we went as usual. And I suppose also maybe kind of looking back, it is more of a special moment for me because it's also the last time Scotland featured in the World Cup. So little did I know at the time how kind of important this kind of time was, but yeah, the expectation for that game, more than the match itself, which, as I say, certainly wasn't a classic by any means, but nah, the expectation of that game, sprinting off the school bus to get home, incredible.
Yeah, because I was going to say, they haven't had, I couldn't remember if they'd actually been to one since, like, obviously, because 86 they qualified because they beat Australia in a playoff, like,
yes, aye. I've read about that. I don't remember it, but yeah, anyway, 86, the 70s, I think we did, right? We're at 70, 74, and 78. 82 and 86, I think, 5 World Cups in a row.
Yeah, yeah. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it? A playoff for the World, a playoff spot for a place in the World Cup final, and it's between Scotland and Australia, too. Two close rivals.
Well, exactly. just over the border from each other.
Let's pit Europe against Oceania.
We did have a good history of getting to World Cups, but no, that's gone. We got to the Euros, Euro 2020, which obviously was played in 2021, which Italy won, of course. Mm. That was our first men's team appearance at a major tournament since France 1998.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a long wait.
Hopefully 2026, when it's an extended competition with, you know, 80 plus teams or whatever it is, they're going to dilute it down. They might have a chance of getting there.
finding ways to get Scotland there, yeah.
even Italy might be there, you never know. Who knows? Well, Italy
are like France. They'll either win it or not be there. It's never, you get teams like that, but it's one extreme, nothing in between.
So what's been your favourite game from your World Cup life?
Favourite game, I am going for, so going to 2006, and it is a semi-final between Germany and Italy. The classic after extra time victory for Italy, the two goals late on. I mean, this game for me, for a number of reasons, is probably the standout game from my World Cup memories. Partly, to me, a lot of football just now, I think, especially in the kind of in the social media era, I think, can get analysed too much. There's everybody, you get so many tactical experts, everyone's obsessed with but it's the high press, the low block. Whereas you get some games that don't need analysis, it's just sheer emotion, skill, and drama. And this, to me, was one of these games. Two absolute football heavyweights, two most successful World Cup sides outside of Brazil. I think I'm right in saying that. Teams at the peak of their power, just going at it, hammer and tongs for 120 minutes. And it just felt like one of those games that it was going to have to be something magic to win it. Also the venue, Westfalen Stadium in Germany, Borussia Dortmund Stadium, perfect venue, one of those venues that's just tailor-made for this kind of night, nighttime game, midweek. It was just not an end-to-end match. I mean, there probably have been, on paper, better football games that have taken place. For example, I don't know, like 82 semi-final with Germany-Italy, obviously, and another Germany-Italy game, a classic 4-3 match. But for me, my memories watching this were just, it was just absolutely stunning game of football.
It was mayhem. It's almost like if you just take the 90 minutes aside, and if it was a 0-0, you know, group stage game, no one would remember it. But if you just watched that 30 minutes of extra time, it was just end-to-end. And just chaos. It was fantastic.
It was absolutely incredible. And I mean, the two goals, I mean, Grosser's goal, just Pirlo's build up, the pass. And it was gonna have to be something spectacular to win the game. That finish, Grosso with his Tardelli-esque celebration. And I do remember people saying after, oh, he was copying Tardelli, he was doing that. I don't know how anybody can confidently say he was caught. For me, if you're scoring the what's turned out to be a World Cup semi-final winning goal in 119 minutes, I don't think you've got time to plan. I'm going to copy Tardelli. To me, that is sheer raw emotion, and you could see that in his face. A stunning goal. And then the second goal, I mean, I was re-watching the highlights actually the other evening, thinking about this, and that second goal, you've got Cannavaro winning the head. I mean, Cannavaro was the man of that tournament for me, like the absolute standout. Wins the ball with an incredible header, charges forward. I think Totti takes over.
Is it Gilardino? Gilardino at one point gets, I think he helps launch it as well.
Yeah, I think Gilardino plays he plays the pass into Del Piero, who's coming in the outside of him. It's another almost like a blind kind of pass. It just Del Piero's coming and the finish and the top corner. And also, it was a great moment for, I can't think if Del Piero had a kind of iconic moment in international kind of jersey at that time. He'd obviously been a key player and massive player at Juventus, but I can't think of him having a like an iconic international moment up to that point. And
it was all misses to Euro 2000, France 98. That was like a everything was washed away with that one goal.
Yeah, so that one, just that finish was extraordinary. And I remember, trying to remember when I heard this, there was an interview I heard, and apparently his celebration after that was over, punching the air and looking up at the stands. Apparently his wife was sitting beside Noel Gallagher, I think, who the two of them, and that's who was celebrating that. As I say, I can't remember exactly where I heard this, and I'm sure it's true. I'm sure I'm not just making this up, but he is a massive Oasis fan, I believe, and yeah. Noel Gallagher was at that game sitting beside Del Piero's wife, and that's apparently who he was celebrating with. I've just made up a good story there.
It's a great story, isn't it? It's like an odd couple in a movie.
But no, I'm sure I've heard that somewhere. That's who was celebrating that. So yes,
a sitcom coming soon. Noel Gallagher, exactly. Alessandro Del Piero, the odd couple.
Yeah, it's the program everybody needs. another thing about that game as well to me was just the. I remember getting texts from people after that game, like, did you see it? It just felt like one of those nights that folk were just absolutely mesmerised by this game to me. As I say, not a game everybody will be remembering as one of the best ever, but to me, it had it all.
It's a standout. Everyone talks about it. Everyone I've spoken to, like nearly everyone I've spoken to in this series has spoken about it and talked about it. And I think too, and they all talk about the extra time. And I think too, because the other semi-final, the Portugal-France semi-final, was a bit of a bore fest, really. And this game, in comparison to that, in particular, the extra time was. And I know people who were there and they still talk about it to this day, and it gives you goosebumps to watch it and think about it, to be there. It's crazy. You haven't even finished celebrating Grosso's goal before you know it.
Yeah.
He's already at the other end and they're scoring again, you know. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, no, it really was. It was an incredible match. Semi-finals and finals can be funny. Like you'll get some classics out there, but then you'll also get some very kind of cagey games. But no, this was definitely one to remember.
Yeah, that's all. I tend to really like the round of 16 and the quarterfinals. Because it's not quite, everyone's not quite on edge. Everyone's starting to build up their form and their fitness. Not so much this World Cup, but it's almost like they get to the semi-finals and everyone's too scared to. No one wants to be that person that cost their team, you know?
Yeah.
Or no one wants to make a mistake. It's always, you know, it's very sort of cagey, like you said.
Yeah.
That 30 minutes definitely wasn't cagey.
No, at all, no. It's funny the different ways games can go in a different, like even with this tournament just now, currently, like strong Ecuador team getting knocked out yesterday, like a team who's won their first game convincingly, a good draw against the Netherlands in their second game, and then they go into the last game thinking, what do we do here? A draw sees us, and suddenly they're out. It can be very, like, these tournaments are funny. Like, how do you let Saudi Arabia win their first game against one of the tournament favourites, lose their next two? Like, it's really very funny, the dynamics of these tournaments.
Can turn very quickly, you know, and team, and likewise, in the flip side, teams can start very slowly, and as Italy have proven time and time again, and improve as the tournament goes on.
There'll be a surprise package at this tournament. Somebody will end up in the semi-finals that you just wouldn't expect. Seems to happen every time.
Yeah. And then finally, your favourite team from your World Cup journey.
So, favourite team. This was probably the question I thought about the most. As I say, I've not got to my main memory of Scotland being at a World Cup, of course, was 1998, which I'm not going to say was my favourite team because. It was a decent team. It was a very workmanlike team, but it was not a great team.
And they're hard questions too, because they change over time, you know, like.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say, being Scottish, we tend to, probably folk of my generation anyway, we usually have had second teams we refer to, like, we have to support another team because, more often than not, our team's not there. So
yeah, I know what that's like growing up in Australia.
Well, exactly. Yeah, very, very kind of similar. Yeah. Although good win for Australia today or yesterday, your time it would have been.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, and a knockout game to look forward to. So yeah, for me, I would say, I mean, Italy is the my kind of go to team at tournaments. When Scotland aren't there, which, as I say, is most tournaments. Also, I mean, I'm usually quite fond of the French teams as well. A lot of great teams over the decades. Croatia is a team I quite often like keep an eye out for. I think a lot of people probably of our kind of generation were kind of gripped by Croatia kind of 96 onwards, and they've always seemed to have a lot of flair. But for me, I'm going to France 98, and it's actually the Netherlands team from France 98 who got knocked out in the semi-finals by Ronaldo's Brazil. This, as I say, part of this comes from in the 90s, I seem to have a bit of a fascination with Dutch football. Didn't really continue beyond the 90s, but no, at that time, I think a lot of this came from the Ajax team that won the 1995 Champions League. Absolutely loved that team. The talent in that team was terrific. And Holland became a kind of team that just got interested in at tournaments. They just seemed to have magic about them, the way they played. And that France 1998 team was, I mean, absolutely jam-packed with talent. Gus Hiddink was the coach. Edwin van der Sar in goals. You had the De Boer brothers, Jaap Stam, Edgar Davids, Mark Overmars, who wasn't even an automatic choice.
Was Seydorf there as well?
Seydorf, I think Seydorf was there.
Bergkamp was there as well.
Bergkamp.
Yeah.
Patrick Kluivert was up front with Bergkamp. Philip Cocker was a player I loved at this kind of time as well. I used to see myself in my glory days as being a bit of an attacking midfielder. for me, Philip Cocker was a player I always just enjoyed watching. That Dutch team, I really thought they were going to win that tournament. And I remember being really, really interested in watching their games. The group stage, they were a wee bit indifferent. I think they drew two. Mexico and Belgium, I think, and Patrick Kluivert got sent off in their opening game. But in between that, they beat South Korea 5-0. And I think that was a bit of a sign of the fireworks that could come from the Netherlands. And the last 16 tie, they beat Yugoslavia 2-1. Edgar David scored a cracking goal in the very last minute, I think, before it went to extra time to win 2-1. And then there was the quarterfinal, everybody remembers, against Argentina.
Yeah, in Marseille.
And again, Marseille, the velodrome, like the Westfalen mentioned earlier with the Italy-Germany game, Marseille is one of those grounds, again, particularly the way it was back then. The old kind of style of the velodrome. It didn't have that was a ground just tailor-made for drama. But can I see a bit Marseille? It's a bit of like a Naples type city as well. Yeah. That kind of style of city for everything just seems to be emotional, and it was the perfect setting for that game. And well, obviously the Bergkamp goal, which one of the greatest goals you'll ever see at a World Cup tie. And I remember thinking when that goal went in, geez, that's it, Holland, they're definitely going to win this. And it was actually, we were on holiday in Europe at this time. I don't know how my dad did this, but we did a driving holiday throughout Europe. Very early days of the internet, but not what he used. He navigated this all through the old road maps, and how he planned this holiday, I don't know, but we visited 4 or 5 countries throughout Europe on a driving holiday, and it took place during France 98. And in the semi-finals, we were actually staying in Germany, but it was in a campsite which was full of Dutch people, and they played It was Netherlands v Brazil in the semi-final at the Velodrome again. It was under the lights this time, under the floodlights, midweek game, and a bit like the Italy-Germany game mentioned, it was probably not everybody's idea of a classic match, but it just, to me, it had kind of had a lot. It had passion, it had emotion, it had excitement, drama. Ronaldo, I think, got the opener for Brazil just after half-time. Looked like they were going to win 1-0, but then Patrick Kluivert scored an absolute tremendous header with a couple of minutes to go to force extra time. Eventually went to penalties, and I think Holland missed two. Frank de Boer, and I think, yeah, my favourite, just looking at my notes, it was my favourite player, Philip Cocu, that missed one as well. So,
yeah,
Brazil went through, and it was the end of the road for the Netherlands. But yeah, that was a team I just felt really attached to. And as I say, watching it, we're watching the game with a lot of Dutch people. And to me, the idea of watching a team in the semi-finals of the World Cup is not something I don't think I'm ever going to experience from Scotland. But no, it was just a great experience to watch that game.
I often think what the final would have been like if it was France versus Netherlands. I think how different potentially it may have been if they had won that penalty shootout.
I think France were probably destined to win that tournament. I mean, I think the Netherlands, when I look back, and I was thinking this as well, like they seem to, possibly more than any other, I don't know if they're the unluckiest side when it comes to major tournament football, or are they the most underachieving side, but they... I think they've won. Is it one European Championships they've got?
Euro 88, I think they won.
Yeah, but when you think of the talented players they've had over that spell and some of the great teams.
And I think that's what gutted everyone in the Netherlands, like with 2010. They got there and they just were in the final, and they were just the complete opposite to what we think of as Dutch football.
I'd agree. I don't know, but I think around about the turn, I remember Euro 2000, did they host that tournament?
No, when they played Italy in that semi-final.
Yeah, the semi-final, yeah.
Amazing game.
Yeah. Aye, yeah, another semi-final game. Was that semi-finals? Yeah. It was the semis, I would say... I'd say after that was when my kind of love affair with Dutch football kind of ended. It didn't really progress after the millennium. I don't really know why, but no, that kind of early 90s, no, sorry, mid to late 90s spell, the Netherlands were my go-to team for tournaments.
I think too, because a lot of it had to do with, like, even here in Australia, when they'd have the European Cup on TV, and it wasn't like now we have every game. You just had... feature matches, and Ajax featured heavily, so you knew about this young brigade of Ajax players with it was Kluivert and Reiziger and Bergkamp, and obviously he'd moved on by that point, but you knew about them, so it was almost like you feel like you had a bit of a soft spot for them, and because they played good football too.
Yeah, they were that kind of team. Yeah, you did feel like and it's interesting as well when there's a team that so many players come from the one club team as well. Obviously, that Ajax team at the time had a massive influence on. Yep.
And there's like six or seven PSV players, because a lot of them had agreed to move on, or maybe they had already moved on. Like Bergkamp had gone to England, I think, and Kluivert had gone to Italy, and Davids had moved to. Oh, yeah, Davids is another one. He'd gone to Italy and.
Yeah,
Seydorf had moved to Real Madrid, or I think he was in Madrid before he went to Italy. I could be wrong, but
I think so. Yup
Steyn was there as well.
I mean, exceptional players. Some absolutely tremendous players.
Overmars, there's another one. I'm sorry to interrupt. Now you start thinking about it, going, man, here, what a bad squad.
Some more names will come up as well. Players that. Wim Jonk, who was always, I mean, he players like that were all, Aaron Winter, these were all excellent players. But yeah, I was thinking also, actually, I was watching the documentary about the Brazilian Ronaldo recently, which is on, and thinking as well, like, he went to PSV, Romario was at PSV. There was a lot of good players seemed to go into Dutch football as well before maybe moving on to some of the bigger European teams. Yeah. But yeah, there was a lot going on in Dutch football at that time.
A great stepping stone, even now for Australian players. Like, it's a perfect stepping stone. Whether those types of leagues, with all respect, due respect, it's like, you know, like Scotland, the Netherlands, Denmark. That's always a great point for Australian players to go there before they potentially want to move on, Switzerland, for example, or even just stay there in that league and make yourself home there, you know, which plenty of Australians
I think so, I mean, that's a definitely great opportunities for players to come over. And
a packed side and a great team, and one that will be remembered, not quite like, you know, 74 and 78, but people still remember that 98 team.
I feel I should also, given that we are in the Gentleman Ultra podcast here and what brings us all together is probably Calcio, I feel I should mention Italia 90. I was 5 at the time, so I'd probably be stretching the truth a wee bit to say I've got great memories of the tournament, but obviously looking back, I remember parts of it, but looking back at that tournament is obviously absolutely magical. Something I think the Gentleman Ultra founder, Richard Hall, did one of your episodes previously, and I'm not sure if there's anything he didn't say about Italia 90 in that episode. So, I mean, for anybody who wants to, who doesn't know about Italia 90 can listen to that episode and get a full run through. That's obviously Italia 90 and obviously the Italian football, the Gazzetta, Football Italia in the 1990s era. That's probably why we're all here. So I definitely have to mention the looking back, the memories of Italia 90, and even just, as I say, watching highlights of that tournament. Obviously a magical tournament, but yeah, I'd definitely be stretching the truth a wee bit to say I've got real memories of it. But it definitely had a big influence in my love for Italian football. Obviously the Paul Gascoigne era stuff. So yeah, great football memories.
Well, it's been awesome to chat, Martin. Thanks for sharing the memories. And
thanks very much. Thanks very much. And it's been a great series. And yeah, really, really enjoy listening to the World Cup memories. It's all, and it's some great personal stuff as well. You can just tell everybody's got their own what it all means to them. So yeah, no, really, really enjoyable. And thanks very much for having me on.
That's great. Much appreciated the kind words. And here's to Scotland in the next World Cup, right?
Oh, yeah. Aye. Maybe we'll be taking on Australia in a knockout match. And good luck to the Socceroos for the remainder of this World Cup.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. All right. Thanks again, Martin.
Cheers.
That was a great conversation with Martin Dunlop, who, of course, you can find his work on gentlemanultra.com. Plenty of culture goodness there available 24/7. Thanks again for listening. Please don't forget to rate, review, and share the podcast. Every little bit helps. Take care and enjoy your culture.